Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to this edition of our English feature program. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Coming up today, fighting for children's rights, why the Holy See is in the front line of the battle to implement the 1989 Convention on the Rights of the Child, and looking ahead to the environmental themes that'll be at the heart of the Pope's 2010 World Peace Day message. We find out how the Franciscans are leading the struggle for an ecological conversion. Protecting children from the tragedies of war, hunger, trafficking and abuse of all kinds. That's the aim of a new world appeal for children launched in Geneva recently by the International Catholic Child Bureau and other non-governmental organisations working in the field of childcare and protection. 20 years ago, in 1989, the United Nations drew up and adopted a Convention on the Rights of the Child, a document which has been ratified by all but two countries of the world, Somalia and the United States. Yet as the new appeal points out, two decades on, many of the lofty goals enshrined in that convention are denied on a daily basis, with children dying from easily preventable diseases, being drafted into armed conflicts, or being trafficked, tortured and exploited for profit or pornography.
I remember, for example, that in a city like Addis Ababa in Ethiopia, some 60,000 children live on the street, not necessarily all orphans or war victims, but children who may have run away from home for some reason or another, or that are part of the process of urbanization that is taking place in many of the developing countries of the world.
Archbishop Silvano Tomasi worked for many years as the Vatican's representative in the Horn of Africa, but today he serves as the Holy See's permanent observer to the United Nations in Geneva, where these 20th anniversary celebrations have been taking place.
First of all, the importance of the Convention on the Rights of the Child needs to be put in front of the attention of the international community once more, because most states of the world have ratified this convention, with the exception of Somalia and, for some technical reasons, the United States. But notwithstanding the convention clear language in defense and in support of the development of the children everywhere in the world, there remain enormous problems. There are children still being recruited into armies, especially rebel armies or non-state military groups. There are children that are forced to work in very dangerous conditions, children that are trafficked and sold into practical slavery, either for work or for sexual abuse. So the problems remain, and with the present economic crisis, there is the risk that millions of children may not have the attention they deserve in terms of food and medicine, so that their growth is stunted and they will remain conditioned by these handicaps for the rest of their lives. For this reason, it was important on the part of Catholic organizations, and as well as by some men and women of goodwill from all kind of walks of life, to re-emphasize the importance of the Convention on the Rights of the Child. And as a side event within the United Nations building, the Bureau International Catholique de l'Enfance has organized some special activities. First of all, the launching of this world, this global appeal for a new mobilization on behalf of children, which is a kind of manifesto that puts the attention and indicates the areas where this new engagement should take place: education for children, food for children, love for children that are abandoned, like street children that are without any point of reference. So there is the desire through this global appeal to sensitize world opinion once more on the needs of the children.
As you say, this was the, or is the, most widely ratified convention, I believe, of them all. And yet the problem seems to be how to implement the goals that are laid out in that convention and presumably in this new appeal. Are there any practical suggestions contained in the manifesto as to how this could be done?
Yes. First of all, the global appeal recalls that the critical points that are in the Convention of the Rights of the Child should be abided by all states who have ratified this convention. Then it calls on local communities to really express the political will to translate into concrete actions the big principles that are outlined in the convention by, for example, separating in prisons children from adults and to have special parts or buildings so that children may not be mixed up with adults and be exposed to all kinds of dangers. Then also the need to have practical structures for children who are abandoned or who have nobody, no adult that takes care of them. By this I mean like houses where children can get an education and can have enough food to grow in a normal, healthy environment. To have, especially those who are the many hundreds of thousands of children who are affected by HIV infection, that they may have antiretroviral medicines. There are all kinds of practical suggestions that would, if respected, if implemented, would really translate the big principles of the convention into a change of life and specific forms of protection for the children.
Pope Benedict has also sent a special message, hasn't he, for this anniversary?
Yes, the sensibility of the Holy Father for the protection of children is well known. And he wants to participate even in events like this one that marks the 20th anniversary of the Convention on the Rights of the Child, with its own not only special blessing, but giving suggestions that would encourage the Catholic engaged in the service of children to continue their mission and to enlarge it so that the children will really benefit from the love and the respect that of their dignity that is proper of the activity of the church. You know, sometimes even in the church, there have been lack of respect for children, and unfortunately, this has been something that is a blot on the behavior of church personnel, but by far, the service of the church through its thousands of schools, through orphanages, through the direct involvement in the protection of street children or children affected by HIV/AIDS, shows that the totality, we can say, of the Catholic and Christian community is really committed, not just in words, but through daily action, to love and to protect the children.
And my thanks there to Archbishop Silvano Tomasi, the Holy See's permanent observer to the United Nations in Geneva. The connection between peace and environmental protection will be at the heart of Pope Benedict's message for the next World Peace Day, to be celebrated on January the 1st, 2010. It's expected to focus on the need for international action to solve the current ecological problems and to underline the fact that all people have an obligation to respect the natural environment as a gift from God the Creator. The document will also echo sections of Benedict's recent encyclical, Veritas in Caritate, as well as Pope John Paul II's 1990 World Peace Day message, entitled Peace with God the Creator, Peace with All of Creation, which was a wake-up call for Catholics about the pressing and far-reaching implications of environmental problems. Just a few years earlier, the World Council of Churches had also highlighted what it called the integrity of creation as one of its priorities. And since then, Christian churches around the world have increasingly been including ecology as an integral part of their justice and peace programs and actions. In many countries, men and women religious have been in the forefront of this work, publishing pamphlets, promoting seminars, or organizing prayer services to encourage others to get involved, whether it's on climate change, biodiversity, water or energy resources. They say it's essential to act now to try and reverse the damaging effects of our overconsumption, waste and pollution of the Earth's natural resources.
From a scientific point of view, from the international research that's going on, it's very, very clear that there is a serious problem.
Leading the way in this environmental awareness campaign are the Franciscans, hardly surprising since St. Francis is so widely revered as patron saint of animals and of the environment.
So it's central, and it always has been central for Franciscans, but I think the very fact that so many other people are becoming more preoccupied and seeing this as a central issue is kind of stimulating us as Franciscans again to look more seriously at our own heritage.
Franciscan Father Geroid O'Connor coordinates the Justice, Peace and Integrity of Creation work for men and women religious here in Rome. He told me how the legacy of the saint continues to inspire 800 years after Francis founded the Order of Friars Minor.
I think, first of all, Francis was, he wasn't an environmentalist. His whole connection with creation was through his love for God and his recognition of the presence of Christ, and that creation through Christ, the whole of creation, came into being. So for Francis, he recognized and he could sense mystically the presence of Christ in the whole of creation. So when he saw something beautiful, it reminded him again of the beauty of God and of the, if you like, the presence of God in the world. It also reminded him that the world is a sacred place. So for Francis, it wasn't just, you know, something within a church, which is also a place to meet God, but it was very, very much out in the world, seeing, meeting the presence of God in creation and in others. And I think this, the 800 years again, when we're reminded of Francis going to Rome to ask for permission from the Pope to embark on this life, this really focuses again. I think for Francis, he sees, first of all, his whole focus on the serving of God in the world. But I think also Francis recognized the unity of everything, the unity of creation. He mystically understood that he was a brother to not only every human being, but also to every creature. And maybe in the past, a lot of focus has gone on to, you know, the kind of sentimental aspect of Francis and his love for creation, but it went beyond sentiment. It went beyond a recognition that we are connected as human beings, not only to other human beings in a very special way, but also to other creatures. And therefore, he recognized that every creature had an intrinsic value, that the other creatures are not just there for our use or abuse, which is unfortunately as well within some traditions of our own church and reflection over the centuries has come to maybe to look at creation and look at other creatures as there to be at the service of the human being. Yes, they are there to, if you like, to enrich the quality of life of the human person. But we're noticing more and more, not only as Franciscans, but I think as Christians in general, that we are not here just to care for creation, but creation is very much, and even more so, caring for us. Because unless we have healthy, vibrant ecosystems, in other words, where there is a variety of species and where there's a variety of life, particularly it becomes even more stark, for example, in the rainforests and in the Amazon and in places like that where there's such a vibrancy of life, but in general around the world, that the more the biodiversity is decreased, the more, for example, we bring in kind of monocultures and all of that, as in agriculture and that, the quality of life is put in danger. So we as Franciscans, I think, are very much looking at trying to promote the integrity of creation, not just looking for technical solutions, because I think we need to go back to looking at what even what John Paul II was saying and what our present Pope is saying, Pope Benedict, that at the heart of the problem of the environmental difficulty is it's ultimately a spiritual problem. It's a moral problem. It's about the way that we as human beings view ourselves in the world. If I view myself as over and above the whole of creation, well, then I'm going to have a certain attitude and approach. If I, as a human, also view myself as part of and not apart from, that changes my whole way of relationship. And I think this is it. The more I feel connected and the more I feel in relationship with other human beings, with other creatures, then, and the more they, as from a perspective of St. Francis, that I feel family with them, then I'm going to feel more responsibility when I see them suffer. And it's not only for the human person. If we see so many people suffering around the world, if we truly feel connected that they and we are brothers and sisters, well, then we can't stand idly by. The same when we look at the destruction of our ecosystems and our environment, and we know that this is not only affecting other creatures, but it's also endangering and causing more suffering for so many vulnerable people. For example, in the whole climate change problem and the melting of the glaciers, for example, in the Himalayas, or in Lima, which depends on the water that runs off the glaciers, or in Mount Kenya as well, which is decreasing at a rapid level. Where is the water going to come to irrigate the land, to irrigate the land that provides food for so many people? This is where I think a lot of the development agencies are also now starting to see that we need to take the perspective of justice and peace, but look at it through the optic of the integrity of creation. Because if we don't have a healthy ecosystem, then all the plans that we work on and everything we do to try to develop and to help people are going to be washed away literally by the rising sea levels or by the desertification of the land. And then we're going to have mass movements of people coming from one country to another. For example, I mean, you look at the moment as an international community, we struggle to try to respond to natural disasters or to the displacement of peoples temporarily. But how can we even imagine responding to something like, for example, if the sea level is rising, how are we going to respond to millions of permanent refugees? Where are they going to go? Who's going to look after them? Then that brings on the whole problem of clashes between different cultures and peoples and the more scarce resources. So, if you like, we as Franciscans, we are becoming more and more aware like many other people, but I think we as Franciscans have a particular responsibility because St. Francis has been proclaimed the patron of the environment, but not only for Catholics, but for all Christians. Francis also is a key figure for men and women of goodwill of all religious traditions. And we can see that even with the call in the past that Pope John Paul made to the leaders of the church to come to Assisi. Why Assisi was chosen? It was chosen as a centre to demonstrate that, you know, collaboration for peace and initiatives are possible between people from all traditions. But it's interesting that Francis was the figure that brought them together. And I think, you know, in this area of peace, if we talk about the importance of peace and reconciliation, we have also to look very, very seriously as well at our relationship with creation. Because it's, I feel like, it's all about right relationships. I'm discovering more and more as I go through life that at the heart of the gospel and from the Franciscan message is about relationship. It's about our, you know, our relationship ultimately with God. And if we recognize the sacred in every person, if we recognize the sacred in all of creation, well, then we're going to relate in a much different way. I think even scientifically we're discovering more and more from the very beginning of when the universe came into existence and that sort of moment when there was practically nothing, from just an infinitely small speck, the whole universe started to emerge, you know, 13, 14, 15 billion years ago. And that out of that, everything that exists today was present in that moment. So if we can even have that understanding that everything that has been created, all that exists today, comes back to that speck, and that God is the one who, out of the relationship of love between and within God, of the Father, the Son, and the Spirit, that communion of love, that that is what poured out, and that is what has poured out into the universe. And I think that, you know, that connection between science and between mysticism is becoming much more, I think, connected. What Francis understood mystically through his deep relationship with Jesus Christ in prayer is emerging scientifically, if you like, what we're starting to discover scientifically. And so there's different ways of coming to know things. Francis, 800 years ago, had these insights that now scientifically we're starting to understand.
You're working very much to make this holistic vision much more appreciated, aren't
yes,
you, by wider
yeah,
society?
Exactly.
Give us some ways in which you're working very practically to help bring this vision about, if you like.
Well, I suppose my focus, because working with and for religious, is to try to get religious cooperating more. I mean, this would be general, not only in environmental work, but this would be much more generally. How can we work more collaboratively together as men and women religious in the church to work for peace, for reconciliation, for the integrity of creation? And one of the ways that we're doing it is very much, for example, trying to get resources together. And we've just published a resource called The Earth Community through the integrity of in Christ, through the integrity of creation, towards justice and peace for all. And that kind of follows a method of looking at what the, first of all, seeing, because even Vatican II, when Paul VI set up the Justice and Peace Commission, he said that the task of the Justice and Peace Commission was to help the church to be aware of the signs of the times, to look, to see. So we're following that. We're looking out into the world. We're seeing what the problems are, the difficulties in climate change, biodiversity loss. We're also in problems of running out of gas and oil, which our economies have been very dependent on up until now. And we're looking at water scarcity, food difficulties and all of that. And then we're seeing, okay, from the point of view of our own tradition, from the Catholic social teaching, from the theology, from our scripture, from our, you know, the whole ethical tradition of the church, how can we illuminate what's happening today? And also particularly for religious, what we're saying to religious is go back to your founders again, go back to your traditions and try to reflect on what's happening through the optic of your charism. Then we move on to the practical things, like what can you do as an individual? I mean, and I'm not going to go into all the details because there's so many things you can do personally as a family, as a religious community, but also not just changing your own behaviour, but maybe, yeah, starting to change by doing little things, because our practice changes when we start changing our mentality. And that's why I come back to what I said in the beginning, our whole vision. If we sense that we are connected, well, then we're going to act in a more moral and ethical way because we don't want to damage the people we love.
This hasn't been a priority for the church over the centuries, has it? I mean, it is becoming more so today.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, even Pope Benedict XVI has said that we have neglected creation theology. We have neglected that whole perspective. We have focused in very much on the redemptive aspect of the human person. But we haven't seen, if you like, and this would be a very Franciscan vision as well, that, you know, through the human person as well, that the whole of creation is on a journey back to God. So that we need to also, if you like, rediscover again creation theology with redemption theology and to reflect together with both of these traditions and to make them much more unified than they have been in the past. I think there's also a lot of fear. I mean, this is maybe a whole other conversation of why, you know, as a church, that we have been slow to move into this area. I think some people have, you know, maybe afraid of some of the people who are and some of the groups who are already involved in environmental work. Maybe some of the very harsh criticisms that have been levelled against the church, you know, accusing Christians of being responsible for the whole environmental damage. So that could be part of the difficulty as well of the dialogue. But I think that we need to enter into dialogue. We need to enter into and open out from our perspective and our understanding, because if we're not in the debate, well, then we can't influence it.
And yet it must be very frustrating for you sometimes to see these, as you say, these conflicts of ideas, these conflicts of interests that are in fact impeding the work that needs to be done to make the church's vision, to make this holistic vision to bear on the debate.
Exactly. But one of the things I think that, first of all, we have to get our own house in order. I mean, I look at religious and I see part of the challenge. The real challenge is a collaborative mentality and it's about a conversion experience, because we as religious very often, you know, we have traditionally, you know, as missionaries as well, we have gone into places, helped to build up places, we have done a lot of work by ourselves, you know, now, if you like, I think the signs of the times and the challenges is, you know, we need to not just get up on our horse and ride out there, but we need to think before we go. We need to sit down with even our own brothers and sisters in religious life and say, this needs to be done. How can we do it together? It's not negating our own charism or what we're bringing to it, but I think if we can work collaboratively together, we can achieve an awful lot more. So therefore, we start there. Then this mentality of collaboration then is going to go out in the way that we treat and we relate to the lay people, with a whole perspective and a whole understanding that we are called as church to mission, to build up God's kingdom. I mean, that's the vision of church. Now, if we can start creating that kind of a vision, well, then it's going to be an awful lot easier to start reaching out to brothers and sisters of other faith traditions. If we learn and enter into this collaborative mentality, then I think that it's much easier to dialogue. It's much easier to listen to somebody else's point of view. It's much easier to be clear about who I am as a Christian, who I am as a Franciscan, and then to open out to others and to listen to their truth without entering into kind of conflict. Looking for what unites us, the both and, rather than the either or, which is unfortunately very prevalent. And at the basis of it really is humility. You know, and this is again a very strong value and virtue of Francis of Assisi. You know, that whole sense of being subservient, being wanting to be the lesser brother. If we can bring that kind of a mentality into the way that we treat one another, not looking for power, prestige, I think we can go an awful lot further.
And my thanks there to Franciscan Father Geroid O'Connor, coordinator of the Justice, Peace and Integrity of Creation Commission for Men and Women Religious here in Rome. And that's all from me, Philippa Hitchin, and from all of us here at the English programme for today. Join us again at this same time tomorrow, or find us on the internet, www.vaticanradio.org/English. For now, stay tuned to Vatican Radio. Laudetur Jesus Christus.